Hey, this is Wade with Wade for Wireless, and I am going to talk about NATE today. And for those of you who don't know, NATE stands for the National Association of Tower Erectors. Now, their sponsorship goes way beyond that. When you look at who sponsors NATE, NATE is another foundation out there to support a group, and they're going to help set standards. And they have the NATE show. Last year it was in San Diego. I'm not sure where it is. It's being February. Well, actually, it was this year in San Diego in February. So anyway, they have a lot of sponsors. If you get in their page, which I believe, let's see here, it is NATE. It's NATE Home, NATEHOME.com. I have it in my website. Just go to my blog. I have it in my blog. Go to my blog and you'll see it. So, National Association of Tower Erectors. What the bulk of the members are tower crew owners, people who do tower work. It's not necessarily the workers. And the other people in it, the tower climber trainers, like a lot of schools that train tower climbers, they're in it as well. And you pay based on the size of your company. It ain't cheap. You pay that money. And once you're a member, supposedly, you know, you get discounts when you go across. You're supposed to help each other out. And you're supposed to support each other in the group is the way it's supposed to work. With that said, I'm not sure that every tower company out there is a member of NATE. It's not cheap to be in. When I was climbing, when we started our crews and everything, we joined NATE, which was a lot of money up front, you know. When we joined NATE, they did give us a lot of guidance on how to set up our insurance and how to set up the structure of the company and what to look for. And they give you a little guidance there. With that said, when you go through them, it's not always the cheapest insurance, but they get you set up. You get educated. And that's the key here. You really want to get educated. So I've droned on about NATE enough. And no, NATE did not ask me to write any of this. If I already said that, I'm sorry. But NATE, this is just something I read, and I'm going to tell you why I'm writing about it. Because NATE is starting a STAR program. And what they're asking for in the STAR program basically is training and things like that. And again, I have the website on my blog. You can go there. But STAR stands for Safety, Training, Accountability, and Reliability. And now here we're getting to it. Here's why I wrote about it. Because one, they do have some they have some interesting lists in there that are free. You know, they're PDF forms. The tower owner checklist, a checklist for evaluating qualified contractors, the telecommunications and broadcast tower inspection checklist. Hard for me to say all that. I probably shouldn't record these in the morning, right? So, all that's in there. And they're PDFs. You can go in and download them. Again, links are in the blog. So, why'd I write about this in the first place? They put a lot of things in writing that your company should already have. But I like what they did here. And I'm going to tell you why. So, they have a section under the NATE STAR webpage that has eligibility and requirements. And why am I bringing that up? Because they actually help define a competent person. And that's why I wrote the blog, because I think it's important to see what standards they set. So they state that the 30-hour OSHA training or equivalent is required for a competent person on site or the supervisor. Now, you should read that because that's important. If you heard me, 30-hour OSHA training. They put a requirement on training for the competent person. How many of you have had 30-hour OSHA training? I've had 10-hour, I've had 30-hour. 30 hours long, and you cover a lot of things that, you know, that have nothing to do with what you're doing. I'm just going to be honest with you. I thought they were interesting, but chances are good you probably won't work in a trench unless you're constructing a tower, and even so, you'll probably have different guys doing that. You probably don't have to worry about, you know, what happens in a truck when you're driving a truck. I'm trying to remember all my 30-hour OSHA training. It's been a long time. But I think this, you know, it's good that they put that on there because you probably should have the extra training. Is it applicable? Maybe, maybe not. The 10-hour training is good for almost everything there. But I like the fact that they put a requirement on training Most people define a competent person as the most experienced person on a site. Well, if you have three guys that are severely inexperienced and they're like 2 weeks on the job, and you have another guy that's been on the job for 6 weeks, and that's your competent person, maybe that's where a lot of this these problems lie. So, for the competent person to be a 30-hour trained OSHA person on site, if you're doing maintenance, and the way I read this, one of your maintenance guys probably should have 30 hours of OSHA training. I don't see a lot of tower crews doing that, but technically, that's the requirement. So it might be a good idea to, if you're a tower crew owner, maybe train a lot more of your guys for the 30-hour class so they can meet the requirement to be a competent person on site. And it also depends on the job. I didn't put this in a blog, but you know what? If you're operating a winch, the competent person better know a lot about that hoist. And I got to tell you, it depends what you're doing, as if how much you know about that hoist. When I say know about the hoist, the load rating, the schematic should be there, basically, you know, a drawing of the hoist. And this is all in the OSHA standards that they just released for the winches. Oh, excuse me. So that all should be taken into consideration when you're defining a competent person. In other words, not all jobs are the same. So if you have a standard crew that does a standard job, and I'm going to use communications in this case for LTE deployments, chances are they're going to do a lot of LTE deployments. Very common, and there's a lot of them. In broadcast, chances are they're going to run a hoist almost every time they do something major on the tower. Maintenance, well then, you know, 2 to 4 guys going up, you know, I'll say maintenance and inspections, going up the tower, inspecting, making sure everything looks good, maybe replacing the vapor wrap on a connector or something like that. In broadcast, maybe looking for leaks, maybe looking for pinholes or bullet holes in the cable, things of that nature. I know in communications, you know, they have to go out, they might have to sweep a line where you'd have one guy in the air and one guy in the ground doing the sweep tests. You know, one guy would be running, say, it used to be Anritsu or Wiltron. I don't know who makes it now. I think it's Anritsu still. So with that said, you're going to have different jobs where you're going to have a different competent person. A competent person right here should have 30-hour OSHA training. So you, almost all your guys, depending upon what you do, should have at least everyone's required to have 10-hour training according to what they have here. But a lot of guys are going to need 30-hour training, and they're going to have to understand they're going to have to be the most experienced person working on that equipment on the site, and it should somehow be defined less than vague like I'm doing here. I'm being pretty vague here, but it should be defined in your company's documentation somewhere. Your company should really have a website or even a PDF where they define that, and that document should be a living document. But what I mean by a living document is it should be updated regularly. It should be probably visited every month, every other month. I know everyone's busy, especially in tower crew companies, because most of them are smaller companies, except like say the, you know, the Maztecs and the bigger companies like that, because, you know, they're structured like a corporation. So they have a lot of overhead. And with a lot of overhead, you usually have somebody who should review that every month. So what I'm saying here is, get that document, make sure you have it. When it's updated, make sure you have the most up-to-date document. This happened to me at a couple, one company I worked for. They would update documentation, they wouldn't tell anybody, specifically the employee handbook. And they would change things, and they wouldn't tell anybody. But now, what do I mean by tell anybody? They would have it out at a website, internal website in the company, but they wouldn't email, they wouldn't inform anybody, and that's a problem. So if you're running a company, it would be in your best interest to at least send out an email. Maybe let the word spread, have the employees talk to each other, because when that changes, you want your employees to know what the latest standards are. If you tell them after the fact, that's a problem. You got to give them like a week to get caught up, because you're talking about crews that are traveling all the time. They're not sitting in the office, and they may or may not be checking email, and they may blow through 30 email to look for that one that really matters. All right, so let's go on. So, the other thing I did, I talk about Nate defining a competent person, 30-hour of OSHA, right? So, let's talk about what OSHA defines as a competent person. I put two sites in there. Now, granted, I think the way I put them in, they're standard competent person outlines for OSHA. And I put them both in there to just show you that OSHA does define it a couple times, or maybe more. But they say that a competent person is capable of, one, of identifying existing and predictable hazards, two, identifying working conditions that are unsanitary, hazardous, or dangerous to employees, and three, has authorization to take prompt corrective measures to eliminate them. So, by way, I'm going to quote here, OSHA, by way of training and or experience, a competent person is knowledgeable of applicable standards, is capable of identifying workplace hazards relating to the specific operation, that's important, specific operation, back to the quote, and has the authority to correct them. Some standards add additional specific requirements which must be met by the competent person, end quotes. So, and I also put the standard in there, 1926.32F, and it states, competent person means one who is capable of identifying existing and predictable hazards in the surroundings of working conditions, which are unsanitary, and it goes on. You know, I mean, basically it says the same thing. You identify hazards, right? You look at the working conditions, and you also look for hazards in the working conditions, okay? Hazards. And you have the authorization to take corrective action. So there you go. And of course, I get a reminder. So that's what I want you guys to realize with the competent person. You're going to, if you are the competent person, which it should be identified in the site, you're going to do everything that you should do in the tailgate meeting. You're going to do your job. That's what you should do in the tailgate meeting. Everyone should identify the hazards in the safety meeting, in the pre-work meeting, which we call tailgate meetings, which a tailgate meeting is getting bigger and bigger, okay? You're discussing the job, the plan, the action, where the safety, where the first aid kits are, where the trauma kits are, where all your emergency stuff is, where the hospital is, and so on, which should be covered day one. So the following days, it should be a reminder, right? Like, hey, remember, it's here. If you guys switch up trucks, because a lot of times you keep it in the truck or on the tailgate, it should really be identified. Like the safety kits, the trauma kits should be identified every day. Maybe you don't, you have the same trucks, whatever. I'm just making a point here that you should recover. You should talk about it every day. Competent person. The competent person should be identified day one. If the competent person is staying there, they should be identified day one. If you're going to have different competent people, should be identified each day. The competent person should be able to identify the hazards. Now, with that said, I think you should use some common sense here. I don't think the competent person is going to just show up on site and bam, probably name 15 hazards. And they probably could, right? It's a tower site. But you're going to have that meeting so a discussion takes place. Then the hazards can be identified and how you're going to work either around them. You're going to eliminate them as best you can. You know, you're still going 200 foot in the air. Let's face it, it's a dangerous job. And whoever's doing it should take the corrective action. I'm going to take something real simple here. So you're going, let's say you're going 250 foot in the air. And you identified who's going up, you identified who's staying on the ground, and so on. And let's say there aren't enough tie-off points in the tower. I was talking about that last week with the steel, the tower owners. So what are you going to do? What's going to be the corrective point of action there? First guy's going to go up and remain tied off. And then let's say your solution is to put in a man rope, a safety rope, and then have your grabs on your harnesses. That is corrective action. That way, if you have trouble tying off, you're tied off on your rope, which you hope the grab works and catches you. I mean, that's the thought. But you've taken corrective action. You found a way. Let's say you have to cross a face. So you got to make a plan where a guy goes up one leg and down another. Let's say only one leg is a climbing leg. So he's got to descend down one way or another. You know, let's say he has to do a controlled descent with a man rope. So he takes up two ropes, which you can pull up. You know, you pull up your load line, you pull up your man ropes, and then he rigs them to the tower, let's say with a bar, termination bar, And then he comes down, and then you pull up your other rope, and you have a guy in a climbing leg and the other leg. You haul up your man line, so now you have something to tie to so you can cross on a face. Now, any of you that can picture any of this, you probably have never done it, okay? Any of you that can picture it, you probably have done it, and you know what I'm talking about. But my point is, as a crew, you should be able to identify and do that. As a competent person, you should be able to spark the conversation to get that going prior to the work. So you want to get all that done before you even start on the job. And that's my point. The plan is a very important of the job. Paying attention is a very important part of the job. Being safe is a very important part of the job. So what you want to do is come up with that plan ahead of time, okay? All right, I think I was on that competent person thing for a long time. I'm hoping you got it. So I also want to go on because Nate also states that people working above 6 feet should be trained in fall protection. All right, I know this sounds funny. To me, it's obvious. But what was that company just recently that got in trouble and got cited because they just sent their guys up without the proper safety gear? Right? You remember that? I should have put I don't remember the name of the company, and I don't want to badmouth any other company, but, you know, they got cited, they got caught. Chances are it was a whistleblower, which at the end of my blog, if you scroll all the way down somewhere, but you'll see that it has the whistleblower information. I want to do something on whistleblowers, and I know I'm getting off subject here, but, you know, we all like our jobs. We all want to work there or somewhere. Let's say we want to collect a paycheck, most of us. How we do that is very different for all of us. But if a company is doing something that puts somebody's lives at stake, I really think it's your responsibility to do something before it's too late. And I know we've all seen the PBS special. ProPublica, I think, was the one who backed it about the guys that, you know, that got injured, and they just worked too long of hours because they just didn't stand up to the project manager at that time, or the turf vendor. I think it was actually a turf vendor they were fighting with. You know, there comes a point when safety comes first. Some guys argue about everything, and then you get a reputation that, you know, you don't want to do anything. But sometimes you got to stand up and just say, hey, we're not going to do it. It's a matter of safety. Listen, I have a hard time doing that because I like to get the job done, and that's sort of how I am, or how I was in the field. So you have to use some common sense here. You should really talk it over with your crew. You shouldn't push yourselves beyond your physical means. You know, some of us are in better shape than others, but even with that said, you still get tired. When you get tired, you make mistakes, you get a little weaker. If you don't eat for a long time, you know, you get weak. Because I've seen guys try to do that too. You know, they just try to work straight through. If you have a good crew, you know, chances are you have food and drink on the site. Oh, by the way, if you're a ground guy, make sure your tower guys stay hydrated. That's your job. If somebody has to make sure there's a case of water on site, make sure there's a case of water on site. But anyways, sometimes you guys got to stand up for safety, for what's right in safety, so everyone comes home alive, okay? It's not easy. And you know what? A lot of scum buckets out there you're going to work for. Let's say if you have a good crew and good customers, God bless you, because that's awesome. But sometimes you're going to work for companies that don't want to pay you or make you, they want to get you done fast, and then they string you along. And there was a string of companies that did that. You know, they just didn't want to pay these smaller companies, and they put a lot of companies out of business. And you know what? They didn't care. Some companies, that's their business plan. They don't care. So I think they're getting weeded out. You know, you got to protect yourself. But if you're a small contractor, chances are someone might try to take advantage of you. Anyway, let's get back to safety. So Nate also, you know, states about over 6 foot, you should be trained. So what I guess the point of this whole article, even though I made it about Nate here, it's about your company. Are your company's standards in writing? I get mixed feedback. You know, everyone says, and I see us on Facebook, oh yeah, everyone does it. Not everyone does it. So make sure your company does it. All you have to do is ask. If you have a safety advisor, your supervisor, the crew chief, whoever you talk to on a regular basis, just ask them. You know, if they post it on a website, internal usually, it's usually not public unless they have it for customers, look at the website. If they have a PDF, make sure you get a copy of the PDF. If you have to print it out or they have it written, make sure you get a copy of the written copy of the print. And also, take it with you if you have to. A lot of you guys have laptops or smartphones. Take it with you. Make sure you can at least read it somewhere. Defining the requirements, it's something that every company should do day one. It's something that they should have a competent person define, they should have the training defined, they should have all that defined. They should have the standards in place. With that said, if you're a brand new employee, chances are they won't have OSHA 10 for you day one. That's scheduled, they have to get a class set up, you know, you really have to get all that going. You might not get your climbing training on day one. You got to get that going. But you can learn a lot by being out in sight. When OSHA 10 comes around, you take your OSHA 10 class. When the climbing class comes around, you take your climbing class. When the first aid class and the CPR class comes around, you take that. Get all the training you can, guys. Oh, and by the way, when you get your certification, keep it. Scan it, keep it. I don't care if you keep a hard copy or a soft copy or what. If you take a class and you don't get a certification, complain. That certification, granted, it's going to be with your company probably, especially with climbing. It's usually with the company. But you should have a copy. You should have. Now, in the old days when I took OSHA training, they gave you a card. Same as first aid and CPR. You just carry all these cards around. But those cards were great because when we worked for a company, we always had to, not always, a lot of customers would require the training certification on site. Nowadays, it's done by email by your company, okay? But it was nice having a card or something with you. Even if you have a copy of it in your cell phone that you can send to somebody right on the spot, not a bad thing to have. I'm just saying, it's a good thing to have. I think it'll really help you out. Plus, you have proof that you took the training. It should have your name and the company name on it. It's usually how it works. So let's talk about our big logs. Big logs. So how's your company at keeping safety and training logs? Do they do a good job? Do you know? Did you look at it? That's something else every company should be doing. They should be every construction company, they should keep record of any accidents, any problems, or anything that goes on. Chances are they have a soft copy, they have it somewhere, but they also might have paper copies or a file, but it should be something that you're allowed to gain access to. Now, when I say gain access, I'm not saying they're going to let you in there and pull files out, but you should be able to ask somebody to see the safety logs. That's why, I don't know if you guys have done a lot of construction, but I used to do a lot of mobile radio, and when you go in these construction plants, they always had so many days without an accident. It was usually right out front, you know, 20 days without accident, 10 days without an accident, and accidents were sometimes something stupid. I'm going to be honest with you. I worked for one company. We went 200 days without an accident. You know what the first accident was? A salesman fell down and busted up his knee, fell in the ice. And we had to report it. It was an accident. So it goes from 200 to 0 days without an accident, 1 day without an accident, 2 days because a salesman fell down and busted up his knee. Hey, I'm not busting on him. You know, the poor guy fell on ice. What do you do? We live in the Northeast. There's a lot of ice here, but everything counts against you. whenever you see it drop from 200 to one, it just stinks. But make sure you have logs of all your accidents. And your accidents might be outside of what you think it is. And you hate to see that number drop from whatever it is. Even if it's at 10 and it goes to 1, it just stinks. So, but they should have logs. I don't know if they'll put them on a website or not. A lot of people don't like to publicize that because if there's a lawsuit or whatever, the law changed everything because people are so happy. And I get it. And you also have workman's comp and things like that. Well, anyway, big logs. Big logs matter. Know what the logs are. They should have documentation of all your certifications, documentation of all your training. In fact, they need them to present to a lot of customers for the training and all that. Even the accident log. That's usually something you report to customers as well, especially when you're setting up the initial agreements to do work. Okay, all that should be in there. And let's talk about big buts. So if the company says they have the information and they say, yeah, but, and they don't want you to see it, you got to ask why. You should be able to see your own training and certifications and even the accident log. They should be able to produce a copy of what's going on Companies are different, you know, they may not produce recent accident information because, again, of lawsuit, workman's comp, or whatever. And I get that. So see what their big butt is. See what's up their big butt, okay? See what's going on. So we talked about big logs and big butts. Listen, if you're working for a company, if you just look at it as a job until you get a better job, that's one thing. You know, you got a lot to worry about if that's the case, especially in this industry. But if you really care about your coworkers and you care about your company moving ahead, maybe it's time that you went beyond just being an employee and start being a team member. I think asking your company for this information is not a bad thing. It may annoy them. They may wonder what you're up to. But the reality is you want to just tell them that you care about your workers, you care about your company. And maybe you want to look over it and see what's next for you. Maybe you want more training. Maybe you want more certifications. You know, maybe you want to move up. Maybe you want a different job. Maybe you want to see what other openings there are within that company or for other companies. You know, I'm always telling you guys, there's more in this industry than climbing. I can't believe how many people put blinders on. With that said, a lot of you guys love climbing, and I think that's awesome. So do what you love. Find what you love. Maybe it's something different. Maybe there's a reason you want to change. Just keep an open mind. All right, guys. I think I harped on about this long enough. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to be safe, be smart, and pay attention. Pay attention to what you're doing. Pay attention to the plan. Those meetings that you have at the site are very important. That training that you do before you get to the site is very important. The documentation you do at the end of a job is very important. When you go home at the end of the day, you go home to your family, that's very important. All right, guys, be safe, be careful, pay attention. See ya.